science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, a place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week, it's a conclusion, I think, to our initial look at social media. I wanted to get a foundation in place. So for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the impact of social media. And I want to conclude our look at that impact by taking a look at how it's affected societal norm and behavior. Because whether we like it or not, social media is always with us. It's always on. It's always around us. There are so many platforms that millions of users around the world constantly have access to and are constantly using and posting in as well. And there are some changes in societal norms that have come along with that. And that's what I want to focus on this week. So if we consider cultural shifts, this is not going to be a particularly long episode. It's just really to bring to an end the little discussion that we've had in this initial look at social media. But if we look at societal and cultural shifts, social media shapes societal norms. I don't think there's any way we can get around that. And it also shapes values, behaviors, and it does this by influencing trends, people's perceptions, attitudes towards various issues. We've had the whole body image problem, which is getting worse almost by the day, where we have these so-called influencers showing what you should look like, or what you should wear, or what you should eat, and all this kind of stuff. And it really has had an impact, I think, across what people think is normal. But it's also extended now into political ideologies. And I mentioned this in the last couple of weeks, this creation of the us and them culture, where there's no longer a meeting in the middle. It is either you believe what I believe or you're an enemy. And that is something that social media has, it might not have purposefully set out to do that, but the very way that social media is structured and the algorithms work in pushing like-minded posts and posts that are controversial to get more hits and more advertising revenue, it's created this very, very diametrically opposed society on just about every level, whether it's on immigration, whether it's on your politics, whether it's on your football team. Oddly enough, it's probably amongst football fans that the divisions that are so violent in some cases are not present. It's almost as if the tribal belonging within football followings, they just, it's a football match. It's a great match. Yes, you've got fringe elements in every activity. We know that. And there are hooligans still. But in terms of the social media bashing that goes on, I haven't really seen that much evidence on that on football, but I have seen it in just about every other type of interest that people can have. And it has developed this us and them push, I think, by accident to start with. But the social media companies are now aware that this is happening, and they haven't really done anything to stop it because, of course, a controversial post where there's lots of people arguing, that generates a lot of hits, which also generates a lot of advertising click revenue. And nowhere is that more common than in our political discourse. And this is the danger, because we have got to this point now. And it's not just in America, folks. You only have to look at home in our country and in other European countries as well. There is a definite push towards, I am right, you are wrong. And that kind of arguing and that kind of ideological push to really, argue an agenda at the expense of every other counterpoint is dangerous because it does limit democracy, no matter what people might try to tell you. And we have to be aware that this is happening and try to get back to that middle ground where people can meet and discuss counterpoints, yes, and have a debate, yes, but not the kind of almost hateful speech between different parties. And our MPs have got a lot to blame for that as well, because they do it even on TV now. There is no meeting of minds anymore. It's we are right, you are wrong, and they push that, and it's an aggressive side that I think is stimulated by getting sound bites to publish on social media. The more positive side of that, however, of this influence side, is the hashtag usage of things like Me Too and Time's Up. They did spark conversations about gender equality and sexual harassment and power dynamics in the wake of some high-profile scandals, and it illustrated how social media can drive cultural shifts, challenge norms, and amplify marginalized voices. The problem is then there's no checks and balance, and it's pushed then over the top and gone too far. And anyone now on social media can rubbish anyone else's reputation or character just by simply tagging them. And even if it's untrue, the post is out there and it can create a lot of harm. And we do know of people that have committed suicide after being wrongly accused or being cyberbullied or being hounded and harassed even by people who think it's quite all right to abuse people online because they are safely behind a screen and a keyboard. They wouldn't dare do it to your face, but it's easy enough to do it when you think that you're safe because no one knows who you are. This is the kind of thinking that's gone into the dangerous overload of how much power social media actually has. And a lot of it now is uncontrolled. Another thing that social media can create is these idea of echo chambers. Now, echo chambers is where individuals are exposed to like-minded views and information, potentially reinforcing any bias that they have. And polarizing opinions again, and it limits diverse perspectives. You should always seek to get a counterpoint to any particular point that's being pushed. The algorithms will definitely pick up what your interests or your beliefs are, and then they will only direct you to posts and groups and news items that reinforce those same beliefs and same opinions. So it's really key that as an individual using social media, we are aware of that and we do actually try to check out the information that's being presented to us because it might not be true. But this polarization of political discourse on platforms like X and Reddit and other platforms and Facebook, it's been attributed to filter bubbles, echo chambers, the constant reinforcement of this bias deepens divisions and it limits those exposures, as we've said, to diverse perspectives. We've also got the idea that social media can promote activism and advocacy. It does serve as a platform for activism, there's no doubt about it, and advocacy and social movements can empower individuals to raise awareness, mobilize support, and drive change on a global scale. Social media campaigns like hashtag climate strike and hashtag Fridays for Future mobilize young people worldwide to demand climate action, and it showcased the power of digital platforms in raising awareness, for sure, in organizing protests, definitely, and driving social change on a global scale to a point. Because the problem is the people then driving these changes become almost too powerful. And they go to extremes, and that then tends to alienate the vast majority of people who initially might be quite interested in this kind of information that's coming out of these hashtags and social movements. But because it then starts to get more extreme in view and content, and viewpoint and content, or the activism becomes more problematic, such as gluing, you know, to the road and stopping ambulances from getting through to emergencies, stuff like that. That then tends to have the flip side to what the activists are trying to achieve, which is to raise awareness. It actually starts to drive people into a negative viewpoint of the information that's being promoted. So we have to watch out for that as well. Let's go back to some in a little bit more detail then. So cultural shifts, real life example, the Me Too movement. We mentioned this in the last couple of weeks. This gained momentum on social media platforms, especially on X and Facebook, where it empowered survivors of sexual harassment and assault to share their stories. It challenged the power dynamics that we have in the workplace in particular. It became an advocate for gender equality. It's no doubt about it, the movement sparked a global conversation about consent, accountability, and systemic change. And it did reshape societal attitudes towards sexual misconduct and gender-based violence. And this is where social media can have a powerful, positive impact. But we have to then be careful and police this, because after a little while, unfortunately, it became about people settling scores. And if that meant they could rubbish someone, it would turn them down for a job maybe, or had turned down even advances made on them, it could be flipped by including this individual in a hashtag. And it caused a lot of scandal that was unnecessary, that was not, people were not particularly guilty of what they were being accused of. Now, don't get me wrong, the individuals that did abuse their power and did abuse their position and wealth and everything else, that was quite right that this was called out, and that we went into a conversation about how can we stop these things from happening ever again, and how can we change people's perception of what's right and wrong. That's all good, but it didn't become a movement for change. It became a movement for revenge, and that's where we've got to be careful. It was the same with the advancing of LGBTQ rights and when visibility with campaigns like Love is Love and Pride Month. It celebrates diversity, which we should all do. It promoted inclusivity and challenged discrimination and the normal of discrimination. The people suddenly realized that they were actually being discriminatory by default rather than any kind of personal belief. It was just built into systems and assumptions that were made on various processes and stuff. And that was great, but again, it provided, and it was great, and it provided a space for LGBTQ individuals to share their stories, connect with allies, and advocate for equal rights. And it did foster, at the start, greater acceptance and understanding in society. But the problem is, again, activism became more important than actually the result of wanting to actually end discrimination and help promote a positive view of groups that didn't have a particularly loud voice up to that point. And the shame of it is that not many of the people that were doing the real kind of severe arguing, abusive language, cancel culture that came out of it, weren't even someone who was personally in any of those categories. It was people speaking up on their behalf. And we have to be careful of that, because the question has to be, why is it that some activists are behaving in the way that they do, and what is their core belief? And the shame of it is, unfortunately, some activists do it for the act of being an activist. And they don't really care about the cause that they say that they are supporting. They just want to be at the forefront of the activism. And we have to learn to differentiate between true activists who want to create a cultural change and activists who just want the PR. They just want the self-promotion. They want to feel important, and that means that they do it by rubbishing someone who has a counter viewpoint. And again, the problem with the movement was it got to the point where these extremists, because they were extremists, that weren't even part of the groups that they were being extreme for, they said, the vast majority of people who weren't part of these groups started to dig in their heels and say, hang on, wait a minute, I don't want this, you know, constantly being pushed down my throat. And that was literally this kind of reaction that people were having, the you know, the man and woman in the street. Yes, they sympathized with these people that have gone through decades or a lifetime of abuse or ridicule or not having a voice. They sympathized with that, but then the activists took it too far and it started to actually cause a resistance to the cause rather than an acceptance that things need to change. Echo chambers are really, really an evil thing that have come out of social media. And I use that word correctly because we get so many instances now of people who are just buying into conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, who are organizing riots or organizing attacks because of what they believe to be true. And many, many times it has been shown that the thing that supposedly caused an attack on a group wasn't actually real, it was fake. And this is the problem, because what echo chambers do is, because of the social media algorithms that prioritize engagement and user preferences, can create these echo chambers. Individuals are exposed to like-minded views and information all the time, and that reinforces existing beliefs and biasness. The phenomenon contributes to political polarization, which we've seen across the world, ideological divides, which is definitely now just so entrenched in most societies around the world. I'm really struggling to see how we can actually bridge the gap between these different groups. And the spread in particular of misinformation, which shapes public discourse and influences societal norms, is evil. People know that when they send this information to these groups, it isn't correct, but they're doing it because they want some kind of public disorder in many respects, or they just want to cause trouble. And so they literally will seize on any so-called snippet of information and present it as fact when many times it's not. And they'll also exaggerate or they'll create a false impression on purpose to get what they want. And people that are intelligent, they suddenly become completely locked into a viewpoint that you cannot try to reason with them once they get onto that particular point, because all they hear every day that they are connected to social media is a viewpoint that supports their own. And when you try to challenge it and you try to point out that a video was fake or a so-called news item isn't on the news, then you get deep state conspiracy theories thrown back at you, and the news isn't, you know, the TV news isn't actually true because it's following what the government say, and so on and so on and so on. And you cannot, you know, well, it can't be. Well, I saw it on YouTube, so it must be true. And it's just like, oh no, you need to verify your facts. And unfortunately, echo chambers don't allow you to do that. And all this came out of the so-called filter bubbles. So filter bubbles were created by personalized content algorithms on platforms like YouTube and Instagram. And they curate users' feeds based on their preferences. And it does severely limit in some cases, any kind of diverse perspective and any alternative viewpoint. And it leads to information silos, confirmation bias, and a narrowing of discourse. This hinders critical thinking. It dumbs us down because we're not questioning what we're being presented with, and this fosters groupthink behavior. Now, in itself, groupthink behavior can be a positive thing. The problem is that it's not coming out now as a positive thing. It's actually been something, groupthink behavior is causing problems and strife and violence and abuse on a daily basis now. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of real thinking going into how do we combat this. And the social media companies don't care because in the meantime, they're making a killing, no pun intended, from all the advertising revenue. And people don't understand that. And there is no questioning of the information that they are being presented with as so-called fact. You only have to look at some adverts. The adverts are presented as though they are a proper statement from BBC News about Martin Lewis has said this. And it turns out Martin Lewis said nothing of the sort. But suddenly, he did. Because it's in my newsfeed. It must be true. And there is no discourse anymore. And I'm not just picking on Martin. It could be any individual that's famous or infamous. But they will suddenly pick on someone. And they will, Elon Musk pops up a lot in these kind of adverts, these false adverts. And you have to stop and study and think, is this true? Or is it something that's trying to get me to click on it to generate revenue, to go and buy something, to get information, personal information, and so on? And people simply aren't doing that. When it comes to activism and advocacy, the climate activism has flipped, basically. I mean, initially, Greta Thunberg and young people, they championed these rights. They became activists through social media, and they did raise the level of discourse that was going on about the dangers presented by climate change. And not just to us, but to what we were doing to nature, what we were doing to the fish, overfishing, for example, or the fact that bees seem to be declining in population at an alarming rate. All these things suddenly became hot topics. And it was great because, we started to talk properly about some of these issues and looked at what the corporations were doing and said, you need to stop that. Or water companies in the UK, for example, constantly polluting lakes and rivers and the ocean around us in the name of profit. And it'd been overlooked for decades. They got away with it for so long, and suddenly the spotlight was shone on them, and that was a positive effect. The problem was, of course, is that although social media platforms can serve as a catalyst for environmental advocacy, and it does empower activists to amplify their voices and engage with policymakers and drive sustainable change, all that's to the positive. The problem is that once again it flipped too far the other way, and instead of now people of an older generation actually saying, well done young person for standing up for your ideals and actually bringing this information to the wider public notice, and I have made some changes because of that, what we're now getting is because of the extreme views that are being put forward, and climate activists, there are some people out there putting extreme wrong misinformation out there to try and get an effect, and then some of the gluing themselves to a busy road near a hospital, all this kind of stuff, it drives people to actually start to resent the information or the activism that's coming their way, and there's been a pushback. And what's amazing about this whole social media campaign that started to create this conversation that young people were engaged in and getting behind, it's been flipped. So the very same tools now are over exaggerating some of the claims that have been made on purpose to actually act as it's all a lie, climate change doesn't happen, or it's not going to happen for another 1,000 years, and by then we'll have sorted out everything and science will save the day, and so on and so on. And corporations are running most of the advertising and counter arguments that are going with that, but using the same hashtags. It's quite scary, really. And this is why we need to, if activism does start on a social media platform, I'm not sure. I don't even have the answer about how we would do it, but we have to try and moderate what that activism then turns into. Is it a movement to engage with the policymakers to change public perception, or is it so that we can, you know, get ourselves in the news and we can cause some damage, but say it was in the name of saving the planet? I'm sorry, but there is that element in there, and it's damaged beyond repair the image of a lot of brave, intelligent, very conscientious young people who truly believe that we have to change our ways when it comes to the planet. I'm with them on that. We need to stop driving everything against the mighty dollar and start to think about the holistic approach to what we're doing. And that is the discourse we should be having. How do we protect the planet whilst making sure that communities are getting more affluent and more choice, and while also changing policies so that we can have energy security and so on? And we're not doing that anymore. It's now become an argument between, well, you're just deliberately disrupting a normal everyday life and you're wrong anyway. And it's we're tarring everyone with the same brush because of a few activists that have gone to a few extreme activists that have gone too far and allowed themselves then to be able to be used as a counterpoint by the invested interests that, you know, do want to protect their bottom line in particular, or governments that don't want to spend money that they haven't got at the moment because of various crises around the world and homegrown crises. And it's an excuse then, isn't it, that for them not to do it. And it's just, I just really wish we could find some way to strike a middle ground where a movement begins, it creates a discourse, and then there's some kind of way to channel that into a positive set of outcomes rather than letting it be hijacked by people who have got their own agenda. And it wasn't just in the climate activism. Black Lives Matter, for example, following the shocking murder of George Floyd, on top of other equally shocking murders by so-called law enforcement officials and officers. And this kind of systemic racism is prevalent, and it was prevalent in particular before this movement began, with assumptions that, you know, like the facial recognition software that was developed by law enforcement agencies, which worked really well on white faces, but the cultural biasness of the programmers had come through in terms of how it was able to interpret the faces of ethnic diverse populations. It couldn't do it. And yet it became, well, you know, we've picked you out of the crowd because we think you're this person. And even when it was proved it wasn't, it still dragged on for these individuals that were hauled into the back of vans, police vans, based on the fact that their face had been incorrectly recognized by a biased software. And it's just incredible that we still have this kind of debate going on. But there's no doubt that when the movement first started, it did shock the world awake. The murder itself shocked the world awake. And we should have been able to then move to change these unconscious bias attitudes that were being promoted, or accepted is probably a better word, without really people really thinking that actually by doing this, I am unconsciously discriminating in favor of my culture against the other cultures. And it became a real positive effect for a while. But the viral hashtags and the global reckoning on racial injustice and the spotlight on police brutality and systemic racism aside, it also led to a backlash because, it, once again, extremists got their hands on the movement and started to pursue a different agenda. The discussion and the policy making should have been, and the growing of the awareness that people can have an unconscious bias, that should have been what the movement was about. And instead, it became an attack the police, attack authority, And again, such attitudes and such actions and such activism, it creates then a backlash, and that's exactly what's been happening. And it's a real shame, because you know, these movements, not just the Black Lives Matters, but the ones that we've also mentioned throughout this little three-part series, they all deserve to be listened to and acted upon. You know, they are serious issues. They are. I don't want to, in any way, shape, or form, denigrate against the initial purpose of these movements and the reasons why they needed to be made. That's not what this is about. This is about social media platforms then being able to sensibly manage the process so that we didn't then get into this hijacking that has gone on with some extremist individuals who have their own agenda to pursue and have basically hijacked a movement for their own purposes. And that then causes the backlash against the underlying truth of those movements, because it goes against these individuals that are being extreme, but then it kind of enables vested interests to rubbish the whole movement. Does that make sense? We need to find a way to do that. I haven't got the answers yet. This is one of the areas I want to look at . But when we come back to do a deep dive on how can we use social media to work with activists to give a positive echo chamber, if you want to use that kind of thinking, but to do it in such a way that we keep the extremists out, and that we have then a sensible discourse, a sensible approach to policies, a sensible approach to how we deal with corporations and businesses, and make them start to think about the way that they conduct their business. It has to be done step by step and with rational thinking and not extremist action. And that is the trick. And I haven't got the answers yet. If you have, then please let me know, because I would love to hear how we can actually we can salvage some of these movements and bring them back to what the core activism was really about, and then make a positive pivot to start to actually change some of the cultural, societal, and business and political views and policies that can deliver a better world for everyone on all fronts. I mean, that's the ideal that we should surely be aiming for, but sadly we don't seem to be. So in conclusion then, these real-life examples, they do illustrate the dual impact of social media on societal terms and behavior. It showcases its role in driving cultural shifts, amplifying voices, and mobilizing movements for social change. But while they have the powers to foster activism and raise awareness and challenge norms, they also present negative challenges which are related to echo chambers, filter bubbles, and polarization. By promoting digital literacy, critical thinking, and inclusive dialogue, the art of debating seems to have long gone. We can harness the positive potential of social media to shape a more informed, empathetic, and equitable society for all. It's important, therefore, that we critically examine social media's impact on communication, privacy, mental health, and societal norms, because while social media offers unprecedented connectivity and opportunities for expression, it also presents challenges that require more thoughtful consideration about the ethical use in particular, and the informed engagement that social media platforms are supposed to provide, but then seem to get all caught up in these algorithms that just seem to make the matter worse. And by understanding the implications of social media and fostering this digital literacy across all age groups, we can harness its potential for positive change better. We can foster meaningful connections, I think, and we can shape this much more resilient digital age society that we need to create to move forward in a positive way. So that wraps up this initial three-part look at social media and its impact. I want to come back later at some point and do a deeper dive into where social media is now. There's been a lot of new acts and laws across the Western world in particular that are being put in place, and see how the social media companies have reacted to that. And also to explore, I want to explore ways that we can help the social media companies. Actually, you know, a win-win would be fantastic. They can still make money, and activists can still get their point across and make some cultural shifts in a positive way. But we need to iron out the ability for movements on social media to be hijacked. And we need to work out how we can really do away with this echo chamber and, you know, group thinking that seems to be the most common effect of social media now, rather than what it initially started out to be. And that's, you know, fun, sharing interests, sharing thoughts, you know, finding groups like my Rovers Under 5 group or my Atari ST user group, all this kind of stuff. You know, I am a nerd, you know, I've mentioned this before. So if you have got any ideas about how we can do this and put a reset, the whole engagement with social media companies, please let me know. I would love to hear them. If you go to darreninform.com/thinkworks forum, there'll be a post for this particular show, and the two episodes previously are up there as well. And come and share your ideas and your thoughts, and we'll have a discussion about that. And it might be something that I bring forward then when we return to the idea of social media in a much deeper dive at some point in the future. Next week, I mentioned that I was a nerd. Next week, we have a conversation with Chris Dingsdale, a friend of mine from many, many moons ago, with a shared interest in comics. And we're going to talk about the comic company giant that never was. The company was called Atlas. It launched in 1975 and it lasted for 10 months. But the legacy of it has been incredible. And with the 50th anniversary now here, there's all kinds of movements suddenly that seem to suggest that Atlas Comics are going to relaunch, and there's even going to be movies based on some of the characters. So come and join us for that discussion. It's great fun. And again, in the forum, we'll put up all the comic covers and some of the things that we're talking about, the images, so you can follow that. But that's next week. In the meantime, folks, for right now, above all else, keep asking questions. Do it nicely, do it constructively, but keep asking those questions, and do it from a point where you are expecting to have an answer. And when you get that answer, listen to it and see if you can engage then in any kind of debate. Because that is how we change the world, and that is how we move humanity forward. Because right now, we seem to be running backwards at an alarming rate. Take care, everyone. See you soon.
Would like to find out more, or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for @DarrenInform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.